Great to have you with us, Brad Thompson, Chris Ranji, Randy Carricker, and we go right to the Brown and Crouppen celebrity line. Simi Yasmin is an Emmy Award-winning journalist and officer in the Epidemic Intelligence Service at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She investigated disease outbreaks and was a principal investigator on a number of CDC studies, and she also trained in journalism at the University of Toronto and in medicine at the University of Cambridge. So she knows what she's talking about, and she's with us now on 101 ESPN. Dr. Yasmin, first of all, thanks so much. We know you're busy and we appreciate you taking some time today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. And just to quickly clarify, I served formally as an officer in the Epidemic Intelligence Service.
Thank you for that clarification.
Well, I tell you what, look, here we react to sports. I mean, that's what our job is. But sports has reacted to this. And I'm sure that you're seeing a lot of the same things. It seems like there's two different camps, Doctor. It's one camp is there's nothing. This is overblown. This is crazy. You're all nuts. And then the other camp is the world is ending. For our fans here, for our listeners, can you kind of simplify this for us? What are we dealing with?
Of course, I'm happy to talk to that. I think there's so much misinformation out there, and one expert says one thing, then a politician contradicts them. But I will say that as a newly minted NCAA women's basketball fan, somebody who's from Britain where we don't really have a basketball tradition, and I've just fallen in love with the sport, I am so gutted that this is affecting the sporting events and that I'm not going to be able to go and participate in my first ever March Madness. But to speak directly to your question, there's a middle ground here where, yes, this is a new infection. It's a new virus. We're learning day by day what's happening. But this is very much a public health crisis that we're seeing globally, but also in the US. We've seen, sadly, delayed response. We've seen mistakes made with regards to the testing kits and their availability. We have to clarify to the public that we don't want you to panic, because panic is actually really bad for public health. It's bad for you too. It doesn't help you get your stuff together. We don't want you to panic, but we want you to be prepared, because this is already disrupting our day-to-day life. So we need to have contingency plans for what's going to happen if my kid's school closes next week. Maybe it's already closed, but what happens if I have to work from home for the next few weeks? And that's why I'm trying to bring this middle ground of, there are politicians saying that it's overblown, they're not white, but there are other politicians saying that this is like so bad, and it has a potential to get there, but right now we need action, we need people to be prepared, take this seriously, so that hopefully we don't get to that stage where we see many more deaths and many more infections.
Is the cancellation of all these events the appropriate response?
It feels like that at the moment to me, and I'll tell you why. Because this is a disease that is spread from person to person, we're trying to limit that transmission happening. And of course, when you're in a stadium and you're sat shoulder to shoulder with people, you're within that distance that the infected droplets can spread. So this new coronavirus is a respiratory disease. The virus is spread when somebody is coughing or sneezing, and those droplets from their mouth or their nose can fly about 3 to 6 feet and they can land on you. And once they get into your respiratory tract, that's how you become infected. And that's why it makes sense to do that social distancing that we're all hearing so much about. What would help even more is if we had more testing earlier on to get a really good idea of just how much local spread is there. When you have those numbers and you have an idea that, wow, there's a lot of spread in this community, it helps you give more tailored advice to people that live there about social distancing, about working from home, school closures, all of those things. But for me, when I hear that advice about not having lots of people, thousands crammed into stadiums, it does make sense in a situation like this.
Dr. Simi Yasmin with us on 101 ESPN, and you can follow Dr. Yasmin at Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R Yasmin, Y-A-S-M-I-N. And you tweeted earlier today that South Korea is seeing a decrease in the number of cases, and you point out not with city-wide lockdowns, but with free, fast drive-through testing. Dr. Yasmin, is there a way in America with as many people as we have at this point to make that feasible, to have the drive-through testing?
So, you know, the irony of it is that I'm sitting here in the Bay Area, and back in 2009, when we had pandemic flu spread across the world, it was here in the Bay that scientists and doctors came up with the idea of drive-through testing and triage. They were thinking, hey, when this kind of disease spreads again in the future, let's make sure that we don't have people who are sick going into hospital waiting rooms and going into clinics. let's have a system set up where somebody can get a free test, a quick test, just by sitting in their car with a healthcare worker who's fully covered up and protected, giving them the test and then giving them the result in the next few hours. The irony of it is that that was developed right here in the States, but we haven't seen that rolled out here. And I'm trying to look at what other countries are doing, like South Korea, for example. What is it that they've been doing that's right that we can learn from? And obviously, they've been looking to the US over previous years, and they've taken this idea of drive-through testing. Of course, now in the States, it feels like we are a bit behind, because countries like South Korea have done upwards of 150,000 tests. Here in the States, we've done closer to around 5,000 or 6,000, I think. It's even hard to get the numbers on that. But we can catch up if we have a really good effort now to try and get the testing kits really out there, try and get as many people tested as possible who need the test, isolate anybody who has symptoms, and really drive home this message, is that if you're sick, if you have symptoms, if you're coughing, you have a fever, you need to stay at home. Do not be in public. And of course, that's the advice that stands all year round for any given illness, but it's especially important now.
Well, it's certainly advice that is, you hear a lot with the normal flu virus. And one of the biggest camps is that you hear is, all right, well, the flu kills more people than coronavirus. So certainly, you know, that's the more important thing. We're overblowing this. When you relate the two, I mean, how do you look at the flu and then the coronavirus?
I want people to pay attention to both of these viruses, to be honest. Flu is a thing that hits us every year and kills many tens of thousands of Americans. It's no light story. You know, we've had 80,000 Americans die of flu in recent years. With this new coronavirus, though, we're learning new things about it day by day, but it does seem at the moment that the death rate from the new infection is about 10 times higher than what we see with the regular flu. So yes, we need to take flu seriously, but we need to take this new threat seriously as well.
So you did say earlier that you don't want people to panic. Panic is actually bad for the public, maybe as bad as the disease itself or the virus itself.
Right.
What does being cautious but not panicking look like?
Right. So what that looks like is sitting down with your family and having a plan, thinking about what the best case scenario is, but also what's potentially the worst case scenario. What will happen if the kids have to stay home from school? Who's going to look after them? And we're learning with this new infection that it looks like kids don't get sick, but they can still carry the virus in them and potentially transmit the infection to other people. So we need to have plans in place that when the kids are home, how will we all look after each other and be in close proximity without getting sick? If somebody in the family gets sick, who's going to take care of them? What are the plans for getting them healthcare? Even things like who in the family is on prescription medications, and do we know we have a few months stash of those? The last thing you want is to run out in the middle of a pandemic when the disease is overwhelming medical services and it's just hard to get even your regular care, or even just potentially hard to get your refill of meds. Thinking about looking after your pets as well, like, do you have enough supplies for them? I think what concerns me is when you go to Costco and there's no toilet paper left. Like, that happens because people are freaking out and no one's giving them guidance about what to do. You don't need months and months of toilet paper. You do need a few weeks of non-perishable items, prescription meds, and plans in place for what will happen if somebody gets sick. Thinking through that stuff can be a bit scary, but actually, by the end of that conversation, you have a better vision in your mind as to what you'll do. And having that sense of control is what stops people from panicking.
Dr. Yasmin, one final thing. As a journalist, how do you think the media has done in handling this?
It's been a really mixed bag, I think. I'm looking at the Seattle Times reporting. They obviously have a terrible epidemic of this disease in the Seattle area. The local journalism there has been absolutely fantastic in asking those hard questions of public officials, really gathering the data and making sure the local residents are informed about what's happening in their neighborhood and how they can stay safe. But then also, sadly, we see a lot of racism and xenophobia creep into journalism during epidemics. We see people calling this infection the Asian flu, or we even see newspaper articles where there's images of Asian people. And that's why we've already seen so many racist attacks against Asians and people of color. We really need to work against that kind of stigma and that kind of ignorance. This is an infection that can affect everybody. It's not just one ethnic group. And as journalists, we need to make sure we're really providing accurate information and news that people can use to stay safe and protect their communities.
You have provided us a great deal of knowledge. We thank you so much for taking some time with us today, and we'll keep following you on Twitter and keep up the great work.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Yasmin.